the VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 619, recorded on August 3rd, 2021.
The 619th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 452nd episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dinser.
I'm Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
So, TJ, what have you been playing?
I just finished a review on a game called Grime.
Grime?
And, Grime, like the dirt, like the muck. Like the filthy filth.
Uh-huh.
It is a Metroidvania. It's similar to – so, like, when I was playing through this game, everything in this world is, like – it's a world full of, like, living rock monsters. And they range from, like – ugly little disproportionate golems to very, very pretty carved – beings, and this world is like it's got like a hierarchy of like the ugly little golems want to be broken into pieces so they can be recarved into more beautiful beings, and you are like this immaculately carved being with a black hole for a head, and you get dropped into the world. You have no idea what's going on, and you sort of just like start realizing that with your black hole head you can absorb the other creatures and gain strengths from them, and so it's a Metroidvania through this weird quirky rock world with a pretty good soundtrack, pretty good platforming, pretty good combat, a little bit of Dark Souls elements, and the fact that like you have to unlock checkpoints in areas along the way. And
why am I starting to get reminded of Dead Cells?
Probably because he looks very similar to that the Dead Cells character with that black hole head.
Well, no, but the Dead Cells character is just a blob of slime. But right. Just the description of the game, it sounds a lot like Dead Cells.
It's got more in common to me with Hollow Knight.
Just the visuals remind me strangely of Ori.
Yes.
Yeah.
It does have very big Ori vibes as well, but like the creepy sort of grotesque nature of it, along with like sort of charming beauty, it's very Hollow Knight to me as far as I've played, like with this weird sort of broken world of ascending creatures. And it's also got a little bit of the old school Castlevania Aria of Sorrow vibe to it, because when you have your normal attacks in the game with various weapons that you'll find, but you also have a parry, and if you parry an enemy, you will break them apart and absorb them, and by absorbing enemies, once you absorb enough of a certain enemy, you gain an ability that you can unlock from them. Like if you absorb enough of a certain enemy, it might allow you to like dash and leave behind a after effect of yourself that they'll get damaged if they attack. Or you might just get you might just get a straight health boost if you unlock that skill from them. So. Yeah, like if you haven't played Aria of Sorrow, it had this soul system where every enemy you killed gave you a different special ability, and this very much reminds me of that.
Also, but it's also sort of blasphemous vibes too.
Yes, I mean, like it's very interesting. Like the world is like ugly beautiful. It's
yeah, it's very grimy, like you said.
Yeah, but it has a lot of colors, you know, blues and teals.
Oh, yeah. It's very beautiful. It looks like it's fully 3D rendered as opposed to pixel, and it looks gorgeous that way. I like the creative idea of the black hole head.
That's... Actually, you know what? That's right. You know, Scott, it does look a little bit like claymation.
A little bit. But I think it's also the rock element that gives it that effect.
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked the environments in this game. For being a world that's like all composed of rocks and rock people and rock worship, it's got a lot of interesting and varied environments that I really enjoyed exploring. The platforming is really like, it gets to a point where it's absurdly difficult, like doing straight up acrobatics with some of the moves that you get. You don't get it, – it's typical Metroidvania in that as you kill certain bosses or pass certain milestones, you unlock more movement-based abilities like a double jump or the ability to latch onto something and fling yourself through it. But yeah, like there's some intense platforming later on. The only thing I really didn't like about it, like I would put this game on par with Hollow Knight if it wasn't for the fact that the checkpoint system in the game and like the fast travel in the game are so spread far apart. Like there, you don't unlock fast travel until like, I would say midway through the game. And there are so few fast travel points in the entire world.
See, that's why I don't play Red Dead Redemption 2 that much. I may play Red Dead Redemption, but I haven't replayed Red Dead Redemption 2 in a long while. Mm-hmm. Because of this stupid fast travel bullshit.
Yeah. And in this game, you will die a lot. And so getting back to where you died can be a problem. I do like – it has some Dark Souls elements in it that you like gain experience through killing enemies. But I do like that it didn't do a very specific Dark Souls thing and that if you die, you don't lose all your experience.
No, you just lose your maximum health or something.
No, it does this –
well, that's Dark Souls too.
There's this mechanic in the game where you lose – where you – you. It's called Ardor. And as you kill
ardor,
enemies,
really?
Yeah. As you kill enemies, you gain ardor up to 100.
When you kill enemies, you get an orgasm, huh?
Yes, that is exactly what I was saying. But in any case, so as you kill enemies, you build your ardor up, and basically what it does is the more you have, the higher your ardor value is, the more you, the more experience that you get per kill.
Oh.
And so if you take hits, it knocks your ardor away, and if you die, you lose it altogether. But by getting back to the place where you died, you can actually get some of your ardor back. So it doesn't punish you so badly as to take away your experience that you've been collecting. It just incentivizes you not to die by like basically you'll gain experience.
Yeah,
more slowly.
I mean it's not the first game to do that. Every enemy you kill, they get more and more valuable as you go along. I know in Pac-Man 256, the 256 part of it is if you can manage to eat 256 dots without a break, and you get a bonus, you know. And there are some other games that did that as well, which I'm trying to remember. But it was sort of like when you first got hit, it's like such a bummer because, I have to start at times one again.
I far prefer this like experience gain incentive compared to losing all my experience if I die.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of what killed Bloodborne for me for a while is that I died in New Game Plus twice and I lost all of the experience that I got from beating the game. Which made me not want to play the game. It's upsetting to die, like, when you're real close to, finishing a boss or something, but it's not so bad as to, like, make you lose everything that you work towards. So, yeah, this was a – I hope they do something about that fast travel. I hope they add a new fast travel mechanism to the game because that – the one that they have right now is, like, ugh. But until they do – I think it's slightly below Hollow Knight in terms of quality.
By the way, I did get a review copy of it in the Epic Game Store, so I'll probably try it out at some point.
Yeah.
Let's see. What else has Cloverbyte done? That's it. This is their first game.
The developer is Aku
something. No, that's the publisher. Akapura Games is the publisher. So they're also separately selling the soundtrack. How is it?
It's got a pretty good soundtrack. I enjoyed a, like, I really it does sort of like the Metroid thing where, like, there are places that have some pretty good music to them, and like some of the bosses have some pretty epic tracks. But there are also sections of the game where it's nothing but like the silent backdrop of the background, like dripping caves, or like there's one area where you hear like whispers in the background and you don't know if you're coming up on a character or if it's just, or an enemy. And I like that. I like that sort of atmospheric experience where not every area needs to be filled with music.
That's a rare thing. I don't think there's a whole lot of games that do that, that just give you the atmosphere of the what's going on around you. There's usually some sort of music being played, so that's nice.
I think Alien Isolation did that.
I think it makes sense on that one because you want.
Well, no, I mean, System Shock 2 had that stupid techno soundtrack, which everybody turned off. Because it might have been fine, but people preferred the cold sterility of the. So this guy, the composer Alex Rowe, he hasn't really done that much. He did do Chrono Arc, which was the fan game based on Chrono Trigger. Did you play that, Scott?
No, I haven't. Yeah, just I haven't played any of the fan games, just Chrono Trigger and Chrono Cross. Okay. I think there was something Dreamers, supposed to be the sequel or something, or a scrap one or something. Mm-hmm. Radical Dreamers, I think. I'm trying to remember what it was called.
So what have you been playing, Scott?
I've been continuing to play Cold Steel 2 and Minecraft. Still enjoying that. Okay. Next month will be, I think they'll have their Minecon, I think, and then they'll probably announce what they're going to add to 1.18. So, waiting on that.
Yeah, there's a mini convention, a video game convention here in New York for 2 days, Play New York City, which is a bunch of indie games, so I'm going to see what's there.
That sounds fun.
It is. As for me, I started playing The Ascent. It's beautiful. But I have issues with the controls. If I play with a gamepad, the movement is fine, but the aiming sucks. If I play with a keyboard and mouse, the moving sucks, but the aiming is perfect. I just wish they would do what you do with Diablo, you know, and you just click on the screen if you're going to play it on PC. You know, just click on the screen and you just fire wherever you happen to click. But so far so good. I haven't gotten far into it because for some reason I decided to replay Spiritfarer. And it's kind of synergistic since Spiritfarer was released today on Switch and PS5. Or PS4 and 5.
Mm-hmm.
So those platforms get to enjoy Spiritfarer.
Yes. I've actually been waiting for the PS5 version of that game.
Why? You want trophies or?
No, it's something I want to sit down with Sam and play because it feels like a good narrative.
Oh, it's a very good narrative. And not a few people have cried during this game.
Yes, I feel I hear it's quite a heartstring puller.
And fortunately, you get the Lily update included with it, which will actually provide some of the backstory. Here's the thing. A little advice about the game. This is not a spoiler. This is just some. Keep playing until only the Basilisk is left. And I keep forgetting his name. I don't think it's Alex. I forgot his name. But keep around till him because you can end the game prematurely if you want to. But I'm saying don't. No, it's not Alex. Alex is the goofy seal. Buck, yeah, Buck is the name of the character. He's the very last one.
Huh.
So just keep playing until he's the only one left. And as a matter of fact, he will tell you, listen, buddy, There's nothing else to do here, so you might as well just finish the game. Without actually saying that. He will tell you, yeah, guess what? There's not much here for you to do, so if you want to end it now, you should end it now. Although, there is a collection aspect. Although, you know, if you end the game and you restart it, you'll start before the end of the game, and you can just collect everything if you want to do that. The Lily update adds some bonus scenes late in the game, and gives you the ability to travel during the dark, but at that point, you're so close to the end of the game, it's not going to really matter that much. And it's something I like to call a mind screwdriver. See, the entire game works with metaphor, and you're supposed to figure out what's going on. The Lily DLC tells you exactly what's going on. But, you know, it doesn't ruin the game at all, you know, because you just sort of suspect what's going on, you know. The Lily DLC gives some closure to the game, and it's great. And that's all I'm going to say. So, like I said, I decided to start the game over again. Because, here's the thing, also. I did not realize that Spiritfarer is actually a kind of long game. When I was first playing, I wasn't really aware of the time I was playing. And now I realize, yeah, this is actually a very long game. Considering. And it's good. But, you know, I still don't feel like I'm wasting my time. I still don't feel like it's a slog, you know? Although I will say this, at one point or another, you might be tempted, just like me, to go to the wiki and see, okay, how am I supposed to do this? Oh, I see. I have no shame in doing that. But what's great about this game is, actually, you know what? There is actually a reference to that that dragon, Cancer, in the game.
Oh, that's neat.
And I know that TJ's very familiar with that game. That is a game that'll stay with you.
Yes, it will.
But I remember Yahtzee Croshaw saying about Spiritfarer and saying that unlike games like Gree, this game knows it's a game first.
Mm-hmm.
And all the emotions, all the stuff will sometimes sneak up on you. You know? And that it doesn't try to hit you over the head with metaphor. Although there is a lot of metaphor in the game. So...
Hmm.
You know, strangely, this game is making me want to play that other game. The game that Microsoft's showing off in which you're in tune with nature. I forgot the name of it. It's also a three-syllable, one-word game as well. You know, the people who are taking care of animals?
Yes.
I forgot the name of it.
Wait, which one?
I'm trying to remember. It's the one in which you have these people on this planet, and they take care of animals with magic. E3 things. I can't believe we don't remember it.
Yeah, I can't remember off the top of my head.
I'm going to check here. Because I know... not Redfall. I'm going to have to edit this crap out. Not Slime Rancher. Although I will say I am looking forward to Slime Rancher.
That's a really Slime still Rancher rather Tactics. Unique... Name Slime Rancher. Never imagined that there would be a farming simulation centered around slime.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember the name of that fucking game, and I don't remember it. Where the hell are you?
Game where you take care of animals using magic.
Yeah, it was a very Gaia-ish game. The game just, you know. And, no, they didn't. Xbox Games 2020, then. Because I know that it was... Destiny. Everwild is the name of the game. That's Rare.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so Spiritfarer sort of reminds me a little bit of Everwild now. Because it's just about taking care of animals, although the animals in Spiritfarer are spirits, and these are actual animals. So. Anyway, that's what I've been playing. So we're going to move on to game news. Now, before we do, The Activision Blizzard thing is going on, and today's news is Bobby Kotick is saying if any managers try to hide information, all that, they'll be dealt with, and all that stuff. And my thing is, Bobby, you created this culture. Stop it. You created this culture. You're partly responsible for it, and yes. You have expressed no, ownership of that.
Yeah, my favorite, I actually had to do coverage on that call today. My absolute favorite part of that was him saying, where is it? People will be held accountable for their actions. And, soon after he said that as a part of his statement, it was also announced that he wouldn't be part of the Q&A session. It's like, what a piece of shit. He's a coward. That dude is an absolute coward.
Yeah, I mean, at least the Activision had the good sense to get rid of John Riccitiello. The other major news we're not going to go deep into is this amusing thing in which the Chinese Communist Party said at China Joy that games need to be, and quote, good, clean, and secure. And then instantly stocks on Chinese development companies just plummeted. NetEase went down 15%. Tencent went down 9%. Bilibili went down 9.5%. XD is down 18%.
Yeah. It seems like it really does seem as though China is about to crack down super hard on gaming. Like, even more than they've done already.
And this line by Henry Gao is, not sure if calling games quote-unquote opium reflects central government's official position, but it certainly is in line with President Xi's thinking.
Yeah.
And then he said, Xi explicitly referred to games as a problem that needs to be quote-unquote solved.
Yeah.
So I don't want to break it to the Chinese government, but you know what? Good luck with that. You know, ask Russia about trying to suppress culture. Look what happened to them. At some point, people are going to get pissed off. So you were going to say something, TJ?
No, I got nothing to say on that particular thing.
Anyways, we're going to move on to our game news. Alleged Xbox quote-unquote stream box prototype appears online, and this comes from some Tom's Guide. It's no secret that Microsoft is betting on game streaming taking off in the future, and it won't necessarily be on an Xbox, which is why we're interested in this new but rather tenuous rumor suggesting an Xbox stream box is on the way. Renders of this alleged prototype Xbox game streaming box are posted on Twitter by PostUp and seems to originate from 4chan or a similar image board site. Yeah, by the way, it's bullshit, but we'll get to that in a moment. While dubious considering the source, the rendered images suggest such a streaming-focused console can draw inspiration from the compact Xbox Series S. Judging from what PostUp has tweeted, it will be a very small device, slightly larger than a deck of cards, that can be used to play games streamed from Microsoft's Xbox Cloud Gaming Service, also referred to as xCloud. However, this does not legitimize the images found anonymously on 4chan. So here's the thing. We already know that what Microsoft is planning. They're already making deals with smart TVs so that you could actually stream from your smart TV. And having something that's sort of like Apple TV, you know, this little tiny box that you just stream through, it's not a stretch of the imagination. So this could be fake news based on reality, you know, because it's kind of obvious what Microsoft is going to be up to.
Yeah, I mean, for what it's worth, like, for what we've seen as far as device, like, the streaming directly is okay, but like it relies on the but you're pulling a little bit of power from the console itself to do that,
which is why I can, if I want to, stream from my browser.
Yeah, and I have used Elgato products for quite a while for a few streams that I've done, but Elgato is kind of a pain in the ass when it comes to working with it through things like OBS and other programs. I'm not fond of how annoying it is to use things like with an Xbox. The one thing that can be said of like an Xbox Stream Box is that you'll have a device that runs one to one with very little hassle or setup. That would probably be pretty simplistic to use, and that sounds appealing.
Well, the appealing thing would be that you take it with you, and you use your hotel Wi-Fi, and you play over the hotel TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that too. I think it's an interesting product. I think it's well worth watching to see what comes of this, because it is like what we've seen so far is like prototype stuff. There's nothing official announced as far as I know yet. So it'll be interesting to see like when this is announced, what actual form it takes and what it is capable of.
Well, Phil Spencer said that, you know, Xbox streaming over a smart TV is coming. Basically said that. And they already are doing betas on the Xbox Live, Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, being able to stream over a browser. And like I said, that's a pretty funny way to get past Apple's bullshit. Because it works with – hey, guess what? It works with Opera. Fancy that – or Safari. Fancy that. So.
Well, yeah, that's cool. Like, I like the opportunities that this thing presents. It'll just be interesting to see what it's actually capable of when they officially announce the product.
Well, this product that was in the screenshot is fake. But we know that Microsoft is coming out with a product like that. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I would not be surprised if it did look like that. Like, it looked like a cigarette case-sized Xbox Series S. Because the Xbox Series S already looks like a – like, if you put it on its side, it looks like, oh, you brought a board game, huh?
Or he brought a hot plate.
So, by the way, I think there's some Steambox stuff going on too. Linux saw a 1% increase in stock, and it's probably going to go higher the closer that we get to actually having Steamboxes. So, yeah. And both of you decided to go with the super expensive 512 gigabyte version.
Yes, I can't wait to get that game and play it. Play Iodine Chronicles when that comes out as well on there, and some of the other games. It'll be really nice to be able to travel with it too. And you can.
I hope. Yeah, here's the thing. I hope that Steam or Valve, whatever, Valve stresses the portable part of it and really goes hard into battery life. Because I think more than anything else, more than screen resolution, more than, you know, whether you're able to do smart TV or whatever bullshit like that, I think the number one thing on top of everybody's list, aside from even more than drive space, is that you can play for 8 hours straight without needing to charge. Silence. TJ.
Mm-hmm.
Say something.
I got nothing to say.
Well, at least agree with me or disagree or something.
Sure. I mean, we're still talking about the stream box, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm asking you, what is your number one priority on having a device like this?
Because
in my eyes, it would be battery life.
Easy setup. Like, basically, I can plug it in, turn it on, and it's ready to go.
Okay, so it's like you want to be able to hook it up to your TV immediately, and, you know, I'm willing to bet you that if it's a smart TV, you'll just say connect, connect. Okay, because on my cell phone, I can just stream video onto my TV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, like, if ultimately it should be like plug and play should be one of the priorities here. But, like, yeah, easy access setup, easy access use. Those are the things that I want out of something like this.
And you, Scott, what's your number one priority for something like the Steam Deck?
Well, I guess for me, the emulation, being able to play older games on there.
Oh, I think that's going to be a given. I mean, it's Steam, it's not Nintendo.
Yeah. And definitely the Ori games and the Trials games, because there's the
touchscreen.
Yeah, all the Trials games will be on Steam pretty soon. And
no, I'm asking if you already own your. I thought, are you playing Ori on Steam or Ori on the Switch?
On Steam, I have Ori on Steam, and there's some other games too. Like Fez will probably play just fine on there. I have a few Metroidvania games and some RPGs that'll play real well on there.
Yeah, I would definitely not want to play something like Civilization on the Steam Deck, because just arcade games, you know, just games that have heavy use of the gamepad if I was to get one.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
All right. Horizon Forbidden West reportedly delayed to 2022. The PlayStation release of Forbidden West has reportedly been delayed into early 2022. Oh, this is from PC Gamer, by the way. A rumor of the delay first surfaced earlier this week when Jeff Grubb said during his Giant Bomb program via Games Radar that Sony was leaning towards delaying the game until next year. Although, as he understood it, the matter hadn't actually been settled. According to a Bloomberg report posted on that day, however, the decision has now been made, and Horizon Forbidden West has indeed been delayed. The delay has the potential to make 2022, which is already turning into a monster year for PC gaming, to be even bigger. It was already set to be a memorable one based on planned releases alone, with games like Starfield, Stalker 2, Elden Ring, and Baldur's Gate 3. But a slew of delays has pumped it up even further, including Ghostwire Tokyo, Rainbow Six Extraction, Gotham Knights, Hogwarts Legacy, Sifu, Lord of the Rings Golem, Kerbal Space Program 2, Stray, and more have already been pushed out of 2021.
Yeah, and a bunch of our console games too that are coming out that year as well. And maybe, hopefully, Vampire the Masquerade 2. don't
that's wistful thinking, Jonah. It's extremely wistful thinking at this point.
Oh.
I don't know, like they had been pretty cagey about saying. So, like, the last time we heard anything about a possible release window for Horizon Forbidden West, PlayStation Studio head, what's his name? Herman, god dang it. I'm trying to remember. Herman Holst had said that, they were still on track for a holiday release date. So that's
holiday?
like this holiday. So they were still on track at the time for a holiday release date, which means they were probably trying to get this out by Christmas.
Maybe it'll be Easter holiday now.
But with this announcement, it sounds like they're pushing to very early 2022. I get the feeling that it was going to be kind of a flip-flop one way or the other, because they had been cautious about actually giving an actual release date despite saying holiday 2021 a couple times. But yeah, like, take all the time you want with this one. Horizon Forbidden West, from the gameplay vertical slice they had, looks very fun. I really want to play more of this franchise.
Yeah. A lot of PC gamers are assuming it's going to hit PC too. at some point afterwards. Not soon, but
yeah. I mean, Horizon Zero Dawn had itself quite a release on PC, so it's a fun game. It's a fun universe. It's
Have
got
you
a good
played
story.
The Horizon? No, I haven't played that yet.
Okay. Well, I mean, if you want to fight robot dinosaurs.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the funnest part of it, is that, like, every creature in that world has a very specific methodology about the way they work and the way that you fight them. Like, there is, I think my favorite in the game is, like, there's a giant, giant bird-like creature that that flies really high in the sky, and the first part of fighting it is you have to get it to notice you. And that involves hitting it with a weapon that can fire that high up into the sky.
I mean, I'm burned out on open world games. Ubisoft did it to me, but Horizon is fine.
Yeah. Horizon is one of the I've never really been 100% into open world games, just because eventually they get boring to me. But that's one that I played all the way through, and not only played all the way through, but like 100%ed all of the subtasks and side quests and all that jazz.
So we're gonna move on to the next item, and this is a fun one. I'll take this one, Scott, so you don't have to.
All right.
Sony's instructions to install PS5 SSD released, and this comes to us from Eurogamer. It looks like support for the PlayStation 5 solid-state drive expansion slot is finally coming, as Sony has published a new support page on how to add an M.2 SSD to a PS5. Firmware which supports M.2 SSDs are only available to beta users right now, but it'll be enabled for everyone in the upcoming system update. The instructions for installing your new SSD, however, are interesting. The support page states, before you begin, you'll need 1. A well-lit room with a table to work on, 2. A number 1 Phillips or crosshead screwdriver, or 3. A small flashlight, optional. There are also 12 stages for the installation itself. By contrast, installing the expansion card on the Xbox Series console is as simple as plugging it in like a memory card. Just to make things a little more complicated, you can't just buy any old SSD off the shelf. There are specific dimensional and internal specifications. SSD manufacturers are starting to confirm products which are compatible with the PS5, just as Seagate did with its FireQ to 530. So,
I remember the hard drive expansion for the Xbox was a specialized one as well. You couldn't just buy any. You had to be the
Xbox
one.
Yeah, later on they did the USB.
Slid into it.
Yeah, people were losing their shit over this. Like, there were a lot of folks out there that were complaining about how that looks so hard to deal with. And first off,
well, here's the thing, though. Remember, when you open up your PS5, you are breaking warranty.
That's not true. Not the way that you're talking about with the SSD.
So if you damage the case or any of the internal components while you're trying to install the SSD, Sony will say, "Well, it's fine. You're installing an SSD."
But you're not breaking warranty by entering the M2 slot. That's covered under it.
Okay.
But secondly, this is a beta. They're still working out the kinks of this, for one, which, like, God's
but
speak
it
has to
a,
people.
But the beta, it's a beta, yeah, but this is physical. It's not
but
software.
What I'm going to say is that Godspeed to people that are taking the first steps in this, but by the time that, like, they move this into 1.0, they will have figured out the issues that are going on with it, what needs to happen, and hardware developers will have put together compatible units for this.
Well, it's not
work
that it's
on.
Compatible, it's just that you have to open up the case to just do all this crap.
But that was always going to be part of it.
I know, but that's the problem, isn't it?
I suppose. I'm
going to bet you the next form factor of the PS5 will just have plug and play.
Probably, but like, the PlayStation 4 had this same. Actually, the PlayStation 4 was harder to get to the hard drive and replace it. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah,
like,
the thing is that You only have 668 free space to begin with on the PlayStation. So this is sort of like mandatory that you have another hard drive or, you know.
And that's what I'm saying, is that by the time they get to version 1.0, I have to imagine that, like, SSD developers will have built a few different PS5 specific options for this. Like, when I guarantee you, the day that version 1.0 of the M2 storage capacity upgrade launches, there will be hardware developers around the board that are going to come out of the woodwork and say, "Here's our M2 that we've developed specifically for the PS5. Come buy it."
Yeah, but you still have to install it.
Sure. But even that doesn't look all that hard.
Okay. There are people who go to the to Best Buy's Geek Squad just to plug in a lamp, you know.
I mean, on the other side of that, I saw people that like straight up build PCs and know how annoying that can be, complaining about having to install an M2. And it's like, really? You've had to troubleshoot water cooling and figure out exactly why your screen isn't working because you didn't put the right wires on the GPU when you were hooking it up to the CPU. And you're really going to complain about one plate that you have to take off, one screw that you have to undo, and then one screw that you have to put back in. I don't know. To me, it's like, it's not the most involved process I've ever seen in upgrades. That might just be me. I know people just want to have a plug and play type experience like what Xbox has, because yes, that is a really easy and super cool way to do that.
I think there's a trade-off, if I remember correctly, that the PS5, I don't know what it is, about how the PS5 would be faster, I think, doing it this way. Faster access speeds or something like that. I'm trying to remember what it was. But there is a trade-off.
Well, you have to make sure that whatever M2 drive you have already has heat sinks built into it, because...
Oh, no, I mean... There's a trade-off with the Xbox. In that plug-and-play, I think you lose something like speed or something like that. I'm not sure which.
Yes. PS5 and Sony suggested that if you're going to go in on this, you should make sure that you get an M2 that has the same, basically, I think, processing speed as the PS5.
Anyways, I just think it's a lot to ask. I mean, we're living in the USB age, damn it. we're living in the USB Bluetooth age.
It's an unfortunate aspect of the way that the PlayStation 5 was built and the way that M2s work in general. So
they wanted to have that looked like a licorice all sorts squashed on its side.
Yeah. But I'm going to be super happy on the day that the M2 upgrade goes 1.0. And like I said, Godspeed to the people that are testing this in beta, because I would not want to be part of that group.
What supersized games have you had your eye on?
I have the Hitman trilogy,
right,
on my system.
PS5?
And that takes up 100 gigabytes on its own.
Okay.
So I can have about 5 to 7 games on my system, and because I review games, I need to keep some space put aside just in case they ask me to review it on the PlayStation.
I swear, you know, Microsoft Flight Simulator on the PC, it's like every other day I have to upload another 40 gigabyte patch.
Yeah.
It's a pain in the ass.
What's the base install on that game?
It's 140 gigabytes.
That sounds about right.
On the Xbox, I think it's like 100, just 100 or something like that.
Huh.
Well, here's the thing, you know, PCs are PCs. The Xbox Series X, while it's a fine machine, is not a PC. It's not as powerful as a PC can get. You know. I mean, I did play Flight Simulator on my Xbox. I recorded a little video of it, and I said, yep, that's Flight Simulator, and then I uninstalled it, because I already have it on my PC.
Hmm.
And by the way, it's also Play Anywhere, so all my saves on my PC go to the Xbox version and vice versa. So it's pointless right now to have it on both.
Nice.
So, I also pre-installed Hades on the Xbox Series X. I already played it on PC, but I want those achievements, damn it.
Yeah. I mean, and I can you hook up does Xbox have compatibility for like flight stick setups?
Oh yeah, as a matter of fact, they've been hawking those things for the Xbox version for the past few days now, looking at the check out this new flight stick, and whilst you have you know, not only is it a flight stick, it has those little pedals too that you can use with your feet. So yeah, there's all sorts of flight sticks that are being hawked for the Xbox Series X version, and people are snapping them up because they really like Microsoft Flight Sim, and they don't have the PC to run it.
Yeah, I mean, like, with the fact of the matter is, to run, you have to really like have
you
a
have beefy to have a solid state drive. You have to have a good internet connection. You have to,
and even then, you probably have to mess with some settings to get it to get it just right.
What? I will say this in the PC version. It just examines your computer and says, okay, here it is.
Oh, and I have to agree with it. It auto-detects.
But here's the thing, though. If I bump it up, I don't see that much of a difference. So I just bump it back down again because guess what? You know, any higher settings, they don't show any improvement for me except for the fact that the frame rate might go down. So I could go 4K, but I go 2K because that's what my monitor is.
Yeah, well, all I'm saying is that it's nice to have sort of a standardized setup for Xbox where
for the Xbox, you can also tweak the graphics there too, but not as much, of course.
Is it like a performance versus visuals type thing?
Basically, yeah. Also, you can remember it also detects what kind of TV you have and all that stuff.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, one of the interesting things about the Ascent is that the Game Pass PC version of the Ascent has to be patched because they forgot, for some reason, for the Game Pass PC version, they forgot to include the ray tracing and other graphic effects. So they have to patch that in. Anyways, we're going to move on to listener feedback. Take it away, Scott.
Okay. We have feedback from Ralph. Hi, guys. As always, thank you very much for your work. Steam Deck. I was thinking about pre-ordering one, but after some days, I did not because I don't think I will really use it. I have a Switch, so if I will travel by train or plane, I can use this. For just a nice have item, it's too expensive.
Yeah, I mean, the Steam Deck is pricey. I mean, it's $600, you know.
Again, it depends on how much of games on Steam or the other options of putting other things on the Steam Deck you want to do. And for me, there's a lot of things I want to do with it, so it's a really good purchase for me, I think, because I'll get a lot of use out of it. And the Switch doesn't have all the games that my Steam account has. Plus, the Switch is mostly Nintendo games, so it's... You know, that's that kind of divide right there. So I wouldn't mind having both of these. They would both travel with me, and I would be able to play these games in other places and show my friends various, games that I have on my own Steam account.
Are you kids old enough to game? Are you kids old enough to game yet?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that's the other thing. If you go on a family vacation, one of you can take the Switch, the other one can take the Steam.
And there'll be a dock, and I'm sure I'll be able to plug in multiple controllers or use Bluetooth controllers, and it'll probably be even easier to game with those Steam games then. So it's a really good purchase for me. So it depends on the person, and I can understand if they're more into the Switch or other games. So continuing, sports games. I don't play sports games no matter what. The only games I enjoyed were Nintendo World Cup and NBA Jam. Maybe Speedball, if you count this as a sports game.
It's a futuristic sports game.
Yeah, I don't play too many sports games either.
I do.
I can relate. I kind of like some of the Mario games, I guess.
Mario Golf. The Mario games. Golf, yeah, Mario which you have golf. To rush after the ball.
And there's the, of course, Mario Kart.
And Mario
That's
Tennis.
That's a good one. Yep, there's tennis. I like their World Cup games or their Olympic ones. Those actually seem to be really good quality.
I wish Neo Geo would just take their entire sports catalog and put it into one package because...
They have it separate.
Neo Turf Masters is the best golf game ever put on an arcade.
Oh, I love Neo Geo's Baseball Stars.
Yes.
I like the RPG golf game that's on the Switch.
That golf Story.
Yeah, Golf Story. Yeah, it has a very good music. It has very good aesthetics. And it's really kind of a fun concept where you're talking to characters and you're interacting with them as NPCs. And you have this story mode with the golf competition. So it looks kind of fun. And you level up and you get skills and abilities.
There's also Punch Club.
Mm-hmm.
I have not finished Punch Club yet. I should really get back to that. Although I know that, TJ, you said there was a sort of like an exploit or at least in which, what was it, if you just focus on stamina, I think it was, or speed or something like that. You're
Punch?
And what, yeah, Punch Club? Yeah.
I haven't played Punch Club, so that wasn't me.
Oh, okay. I know someone told me that if you focus mainly on one aspect, the rest of the game is a breeze. You've never played Punch Club?
I haven't.
It's $10 on Steam. Try it out. It's a boxing RPG.
I played another game that was by those same people. I can't remember what it was.
Oh, well, there was this basketball game that was an RPG in which if you won, one of your people ascended, so you no longer had that player anymore. I forgot the name of it. I think it was done by the guys who did Hades and stuff.
Oh, Graveyard Keeper.
No, not Graveyard Keeper.
No, I was saying the same people who made... Punch Club made Graveyard Keeper.
Yeah.
Which I love that game.
We know. Did you ever get the DLC for it?
I didn't.
Oh. Well, anyways, moving on.
Yeah. Hades, I bought this game on sale, but did not really start it. But after you talk about it, I think I'll have to do so.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty good.
That's a good game. Definitely should play. It's very roguelike. You can just pick it up, play for a little while, and then come back to it later. It doesn't ask a lot of your time, I think.
The game that knocked Streets of Rage 4 off TJ's number one list for the year. And he was going on and on about Streets of Rage 4 for a long while.
Streets of Rage 4 is amazing.
But Hades is even more amazing.
Yeah, it was like, I think my list was actually like Hades at number one, Streets of Rage 4 at number two. Mm. I still love Streets of Rage 4. The DLC that they put out for it pretty recently is amazing.
Anyways, moving on.
Rafe says that he also played a lot of World of Warcraft, but the main thing is he played with his friends. That's exactly what World of Warcraft is play with your friends.
I played solo in World of Warcraft.
It's going to be a lot harder.
I was just one of those PUGers.
It's definitely a lot harder to play by yourself, especially those instances where the enemies are a lot tougher, even if you're over level.
That's fine because I was always a support class, so.
Yeah.
And they're always looking for support.
Yeah. Besides, I played Guiana Sisters, Twisted Dreams, some pinball games. I got the Windows pinball game, still works great on my computer. Some shmup games, and of course a lot of Magic the Gathering Arena. I can't wait to play the new Hollow Knight title, Silk, to come out.
Yeah, I know that TJ is looking forward to Silk.
Yeah, the Hollow Knight is a nice game. That's a good series. It's very challenging.
Any word on that, by the way? We talked about it a couple of weeks ago about its release date.
They've been pretty radio silent on it. I think – I can't remember if I saw that they pushed it back to 2022, but like they haven't said – they've been very, very, very quiet about it. I know that much.
It's amazing how many good games are going to come out 2022 and 2023. Looking very forward to those 2 years.
Silk is supposed to be, it was supposed to be an expansion, no? And they just said, screw it, we'll make it a standalone.
Silk Song, by the way. Hollow Knight Silk Song.
Oh. All right, and Riff continues. Sorry, can't tell more about other topics, but I listened to them for sure. Keep up the good work, and please stay healthy, guys. Greetings from Germany, Ralph. It was nice to hear from him again.
Yeah. So anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net. Along with industry news and our gaming history articles, we enjoy your feedback. So leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. All set us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Charter Moore.
And we will see you next week, and hopefully we'll have more news.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.
That's it.